When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to episode 53 of the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from the next town, Josh Hopkins. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Rex Everett Chapman. How's it going?
You're back. You had a week hiatus, a little family stuff at home. I'm glad you're back. How's the fam?
Everybody's doing pretty well. Thank you. Okay. Thanks. I'm still here.
In Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah, I'll be about 3 weeks. It's long time home, but it's been really nice.
I like that you're home in your crib, especially for today's episode.
Yes, as it turns out. Perfectly.
Yes. We have a great guest. We'll get into that in a moment. But big news this week in the NBA, LeBron resigned. Thoughts?
For a lot of money.
A lot of money, but I have a question. I mean, it's a lot of money. Was it like 2 years and 90 some million or something like that? It just seems like there should be, you can't pay he and Stephen enough.
Right.
It's a shame there's a max, I guess.
Right.
For him and for Stephen and for, you know, maybe one or two other players, but I get it. It's a shit ton of money and it's most money that I get it. But how can somebody else also make that amount? You know, it's just crazy.
There's no cap on it. You know,
what
point is there a franchise? Because it's happened a little bit, but I suspect it'd be baseball where they're like, look, we'll give you this, and your minority owner. But not a small minority owner of that.
Yeah, can't do it. Can't do it legally. But, you know, there can be wink winks at for when I'm done playing and whatnot.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
But just crazy money and good for him. If anybody deserves it, he does. He carries the league at times. And, you know, I just think about how lucky we are right now in this moment to have ambassadors of the game like Stephen Curry, LeBron James, and Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Mm-hmm.
Three guys who have fun, they live life, and they're good guys. Yeah. They're good guys, you know, they're easier to root for, I think. Well, a lot of people don't like rooting for LeBron, but I happen to.
I know, that's a result of his greatness in so many ways. So much misguided, like he's taking his talents to Miami, like, oh boy, whatever. This is episode 53.
It is 53. Famous 53s in sports. Who's the first one that comes to your mind?
Daryl Dawkins.
Yeah, Chocolate Thunder. Played against him.
Really? There was.
Yeah, Mark Eaton, rest in peace, played against him. How about Artis Gilmore?
He
played against them.
He wore 53 with the Kentucky Colonels in the ABA.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Rick Powell had a little flirtation with 53. He just kind of liked the number. He just thinks it's
53.
A cool
Rick Roby from Kentucky.
Rick Roby. Great.
Yeah. Was great. Don Drysdale 53?
He was. He was. Was he? Yeah. I think I remember that because of the Brady Bunch episode he was on.
Yeah, yeah. And then one of my favorite 53s of all time, also played against him, James Buddha Edwards.
Okay.
Detroit Pistons, Bad Boys teams.
And it's interesting because, you know, I'm a 5 and you're a 3.
And a 3, that's right.
Ooh. 5 and 3. Wow. On episode, and also it's cool because we're 5 and 3 and our guest is I'm having heart palpitations.
Yeah, we'll get right to it, but real quick, one other thing. the New Jersey Nets made a, or Brooklyn Nets made a great acquisition yesterday. They got, they picked up Kevin Durant. He's back. He's back in good graces. Everybody loves one another and all that until he changes his mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it'll be fun to see what, you know, what they can be if a full season, everyone together.
Yeah.
You know,
Ben, I'm glad though. I'm happy that, you know, at least publicly, there's a good face put on it. And I got to be honest, watching Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, you know, Joe Harris, Ben Simmons, if Ben Simmons is the best defensive player in the league, like we know he has been before, and he just runs up and down the floor as a point center, that's pretty compelling. So just as a basketball person, I'm happy that KD's back, and we know we're going to see KD play basketball this fall.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's a lot of fun. Before we get to my guy, let's do a book club segment.
We should.
What'd you read this week that you might pass on to the listeners?
Nothing. Oh. Didn't read a thing. Nothing. Not even the internet.
You didn't read the World Wide Web?
I did. Okay. I did. But that's not real reading.
Yeah, I guess. No, that's not a book.
Yeah.
So I actually did.
What about you?
I did nothing at all. That's been book club. Okay.
Yeah. What? Hey. Come on. All right. So, Josh, today, you know who the guest is. I am very happy to be able to do this and share this experience with you. On episode 53, we have Josh's all-time football hero, Pro Football Hall of Famer, class of 99, ninth all-time leading rusher in the NFL, four-time NFL rushing leader, single-season rushing record, 2,101 yards, five-time All-Pro, six-time Pro Bowler. We welcome Eric Dimitri Dickerson, ED.
Not my middle name, Dimitri.
We try to find everybody's middle name. How are you, man? Thanks for doing this.
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm going to let Josh start. He's got quite the story.
Eric, man, I don't know how to say it any more succinctly. Like, you, I idolized you so much growing up, to a point I lived in LA for over 20 years, recently moved back but to Austin. We're both from Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And somehow I would see you at these places, like in LA, once in Florida, different places. And you must think there's an army of big goofy guys like me that come up and go, Eric Demetrius Dickerson, born September 6th, 1960, Sealy, Texas, Aunt Viola raised you. And it was, you had, and look, there's one time we met. That was in Florida at my friend's wedding. You were at a golf tournament, maybe Emmett's, or, and people couldn't believe you were there because they know, I mean, every, look, see this?
I like that shirt.
Yeah, my buddy sent it to me. Everybody thinks of me when they see, I got two more of these guys sent to me. I mean, you were synonymous with my name and with me for all my friends growing up. And one of the crazy things is my other huge.
Look at that.
Look at that. That was, well, I found it.
Got your Ram hat, the original.
Yeah, story. I found it in the closet. So, man, cool. My other big hero growing up in Kentucky was Rex Chapman. And now we're like best friends. And I have Eric Dickerson on the pod between both of you. I don't know how to act. I'm glowing. People ask me if I'm pregnant. I look so great. I just, and I was come up to to Rex, and I'd be like, Rex Chapman, Rex Everett Chapman, October 5th, 1967. Your dad, Wayne Chapman, coach. And here I am with both of you by happenstance of the way things happen in life. Like, we didn't get to do you like a week, 10 days ago when we were, had you scheduled, something happened. But I've since had to come home and spend some time with my mom in Kentucky. And we were going through a closet and they were, oh, you want to throw this? And I saw all of these posters and I was like, there's no, and rolled them in. I'd like to take you two on a little tour of sort of what my room would have looked like for my younger years. We got, here we go. There's Rex doing his thing. That's a big poster right there.
That's a big poster, right?
Of course, you come over here and you got my, my guy.
There it is. There it is.
That's my guy. Oh, always, yeah, really, wow, liked your pen.
Look at that. Yeah.
Here you are. That's, we got a long, even a Colts
ago, twin, man.
Oh, look, the Rams guy. But look at this. This is, I met you when I was 14, went to a game in Cincinnati, and my eighth grade girlfriend blew this picture up of us.
Jerry curl.
Look at the Jerry curl and glasses.
Jerry curl. Oh, my God. The Alpina
14-year-old me was thrilled. And this is one of my favorite things. This is classic.
Oh,
look. Look at that.
I heard that. God.
And then we got, man, down here, we got Rex, and the cat's Christmas card. There he is out front in his gray suit. This was great. The Rams sent this to me because they heard what up. Look at that. You can't
look
hit that.
That.
Look at that curl.
Johnny Johnson, Nolan Cromwell, loved him. Of course, you, right. Jack Youngblood, and old Vince Ferragamo.
Vince Ferragamo, you got
the
it.
The only one it. That was signed, they got you to sign it.
Wow.
So, I also did have some other interests.
Hey, now we're going to the right. Yeah, now we're talking.
So I wasn't, I was well-rounded.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shit.
Man, that's so great. Yeah. So, Eric, hopefully that cheers you up a little bit today.
That makes you laugh. Yeah.
Hey,
I need to laugh.
Good. Thanks for doing this. Hey, all right. I want to get into this a little bit. You found out later in your childhood that you were actually raised by your great aunt. And around that time, same time, you kind of found your identity on the football field. How'd those two things sort of, shape you into the man you'd grow up to become?
Well, I found out about, I was adopted, I think I was in sixth grade, when I found out a teacher told me, Holiday told me, I forget her name, Miss, she lived right close to us. And, I always had some questions of why my parents are so much older than everyone else's, but you don't ask the black mom, dad, that, that you just don't ask that. And so when she told me, she said, go home and ask. She had me stay after school, after class, and said, have me come up. She said, have you seen your mom and dad? Have you seen your dad? I said, my dad at home. She said, no, boy, you're a real daddy. I'm like, who are you talking about? She said, go home and ask your mom who Richard Seals is. She said, my mother called him Miss Red. She said, that's not your mama. She said, your mom is Miss Hella.
Why did she tell you that? Why did she tell you that?
Well, honestly, she did it to be hateful. She really did. She was trying to hurt my mother. She was jealous of my mother. Okay. And she liked my mother's, at that time, I guess her ex-boyfriend's brother. She liked him. So I went home and asked my mom, and man, and boy, what the hell did she tell you? That's not true. And I'll never forget it. My dad was so calm. He said, it's Red. He called my mother Red. My nickname was Red. Red, settle down. He said, what did she tell you? I said, she told me that y'all are not my parents, that Helen's my mom. Y'all adopted me. And man, and ooh, it just caused a big uproar because my mother, my biologist, she called next door. My mother lived right next door, next door, like 20 yards.
Wow.
So she goes over. She calls and tell her, come over here and tell this boy about Richard. Mother came over. I remember this, the screen, I hear the screen door slamming from across the way.
Wow.
Came over, what did she tell you? I said, she told me that you're my mom and that, I was adopted, blah, blah, blah. So my mother, my real mother, honestly was going to go over and kill her. She went to get a pistol to kill her. And my dad stopped her. But she went over to her house. You could see her house from our house. She went over and beat on her door and told her, bang, bitch, you come out. You don't be telling mine, blah, blah, blah. Wow. So it caused an uproar. But you know what, Rex? It didn't change me. You know, it answered the questions. But
how old were you, Eric? How old were you?
I was, what are you in sixth grade with?
12
years old.
11.
I was about 11 or 12 years old. It didn't change anything at all. I mean, I love my parents. I love my dad. I mean, I say that my dad was the best man in the whole world. Seriously, my adopted father and my mother. And then it kind of answered the questions. And my mother was my sister was my mom. And funny later, because, you know, she would tell me to do something. I would say, you're not my mama. And she would say, Eric, I would go, ooh, I am your mother. Like, she couldn't say nothing. She never told me.
Wow.
So, but it didn't cause anything. And as far as the football, man, I love football. My mom, Viola, she did not want me to play. And back then they had to have somebody to sign for you to play football.
Yeah.
She
when did you do that? When did you sign to play? And when did you know, oh, I like this. I'm better than everybody.
Seventh grade. That was she signed. Matter of fact, my godmother signed. And my godmother lived right in front of us. And she said, I'm not going to do it. She said, go ask your godmother. So I went over and asked my godmother to sign. Her name was, we call her Mama Earlene. Earlene Long was her name. I went over and asked her and she said, are you sure? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, Red won't sign? I said, no, ma'am, she won't sign for me. She said, you positive? Yes, ma'am, I'm positive. So she signed. I'll never forget, my mother was mad at her. Why did you sign that paper? I didn't think you'd sign it. So she signed me to play. That's how I got a chance to play. And, you know, from the first time, my first game, we played the Walla Bulldogs. I won't forget, on a Saturday morning, because we were supposed to play on Thursday and it got rained out. And I think I had 5 or 6 touchdowns. And I just loved it. I loved it from that point on. I just fell in love with it. Yeah.
Steph Curry's record-breaking three-pointer, Jason Tatum's buzzer-beating alley-oop, Ja Morant's poster dunk. NBA Top Shot is where the greatest moments from NBA history are turned into officially licensed digital collectibles. NBA Top Shot has evolved trading cards by making it easier to buy, sell, and collect by removing the hassle of grading, shoeboxes, and shipping fees. You can buy or sell moments in a few clicks and access them at any time on your phone or computer. Your collection is always at your fingertips. Start collecting Top Shot moments in any way you want. Collect rookie moments from future stars like Evan Mobley and Cade Cunningham. Collect throwback moments from former NBA stars like Shaq and Allen Iverson. Or collect moments from your favorite team to gain access to exclusive perks. Grab your starter pack today, and Top Shot will give you $20 back to start your collection and pick up some of your favorite moments in the marketplace. Go to about.nbatopshot.com/bballnews and get in the game today. Athletically, from the time, you know, you're running races in PE, were you better, faster, bigger, stronger? When did you bloom physically?
I was fast as a kid, really fast. Like, I could outrun what most of y'all kids my age, for sure. And then some of the, matter of fact, when I was in seventh grade, I could outrun pretty much everyone in high school. And, you know, I didn't, you know, I, you know, you thought nothing of it, but I'm going to fast forward a little bit. Matter of fact, when I got drafted, I played the St. Louis Cardinals. And speaking of my dad, my real father, you know, and he's cool. A guy, Emmett Thomas, Hall of Famer Emmett Thomas. We played the Cardinals in St. Louis, and my friend Roy Green said, hey, Eric, Emmett Thomas wants to talk. He's for the game. This is like we bought that warming up with shorts and stuff. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll talk to him. I go over. He said, hey, Eric. He said, I'm Emmett Thomas. So how you doing? He said, I'm from down by your area. I said, really? He said, let me ask you a question. He said, lady who raised you, her name is Viola. Call her Miss Red. I said, yeah. Your dad was named Carrie. He kind of went through my whole history, you know, my grandmother, grandfather. He said, let me ask you a question. If it's too personal, you tell me. I said, yeah. He says, your real dad named Richard Seal. I said, yeah. He said, Eric, I knew it. He said, I know your dad. He said, I know his brothers. He said, man, they were fast. He said, all of them running backs. They went to Prairie View. He said, man, I knew. He said, I hadn't seen your dad in like 20 years. He said, but when I saw you and I saw the way you run, he said, you run just like them seals. He said, I went back and looked at the time you were born. He said, got to be him. I said, it's me. So, boom. That's cool. That's cool. Your DNA is something else.
Wow.
They had the upright style like you did,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
which is, yeah, I haven't seen before nor since, like, someone run like that.
Yeah, he said they ran upright. He said they were big, fast. You know, my dad's about 6'2", and his brother was taller. So he said all of them ran upright. And then, you know, that's how I ran.
Well, Designer jeans.
Yeah. Well, you won the 100 in Texas high school. Did you ever think about exclusively going to track?
I love track and field. I won the 100 and the 200. I love it. I mean, love to death. Matter of fact, my son, he's 10, and man, is he fast. Woo! And I'm not just saying it either. I mean, as the old saying, we know speed, no speed.
Speed, no speed. Roy Green speed. Knew speed. Green right, Bean. Right, you know, right, I know Roy.
Yeah. Speed, no speed. You know what? I wish I went out for the track team in college. And I was on the track team. But, man, I was so homesick that you had to stay for the Christmas holidays to run track. And I wanted to go home. So I said, you know what? They told me I got to just play football. I didn't run track. And I regret that to this day that I didn't run track.
Well, they say all the time, you know, when you were coming out, he's so big. You know, 6'2", 6'3", 225, ran some crazy and won the state. How can you be that fast? I was 12 when you were drafted, and you didn't get all those highlights. I had to stay up like Monday.
Yeah.
Halftime to see Eric Dickerson highlights. You know, I was like, And they did a game break. And they showed it was the fifth game of the season against the Jets. You know the play.
Pitcher, I know the play. 85-yard touchdown run.
85 yards, and you just pulled away, and that one defensive back couldn't keep up and was running too fast, and his arm started going like this, and he fell down. He looked like the opening of Good Times, you know, reruns going towards the truck. I mean, and I was like, yeah, he's fast, all right.
Well, I can tell you a story behind that. Matter of fact, when I got to the Rams, John Robinson, we were running plays, and one plays was like a toss play, and I was had to follow the guard and tackle. And he was stop. He said, Eric, he said, you can't be jogging, son. I said, Coach, I'm not jogging. He said, run it again. So I ran it again, and you know, I did the same thing. I'm kind of giving space, but I'm running. He said, Eric, he said, look, I know you do it, but you. I said, Coach, I'm running fast. I said, I'll tell you what. Get out here and try to catch me. So he laughed. So in that game, after that game, when I had the 85-yard touchdown run, he came to the sideline. He said, I guess you were running fast in practice. So it looked like you were jogging there too.
Effortless, man. You just whew, a gazelle.
Yeah, it was a God-given talent. It really was.
I gotta ask, you know, from your book, it seemed like you're almost done with football before it got started. You and your black teammates weren't treated like your white teammates. You know, what inspired you to push back, you know, and push for equality in the 70s when there was just this expectation for you to shut up and play?
You know, I've always been that guy to stand up, you know, for right. And it didn't make a difference what color you were to me. Mm-hmm. Because you got to understand, I grew up when there was segregation. I went to a black school and the kids were white, kids went to the white school, but we knew the kids because we were in a small town. We all kind of knew each other. So we got to go to the school together. You know, we played football in seventh grade, eighth grade. And we got to high school, we got a new coach. A coach came in from East Texas, Ralph Harris is his name. And we heard he'd never coached blacks before, never coached black kids before. And it just kind of started from that point on. I mean, you know, way he would treat us. And the thing about it is, even the white kids would say it. And they would treat them bad, too, sometimes. I mean, it really was. Yeah. He said, he's just not right. And, you know, a couple of times I called him out on it, you know, because I quit football my sophomore year. I quit, you know, because all the black kids quit. It was a deal where he had us running. It was just so unfair. Just run. And he said, you're going to run till I tell you it's enough. And it was all us, just black. So all of us quit except one guy. And finally, you know, I got to say that, you know, it's always someone that comes into your life that makes a difference. And not, I mean, my parents were the best. I mean, I had the best parents. But my mom wasn't, she didn't like football. My dad loved baseball, but he wanted me to always succeed. Didn't want me to quit. If he didn't like that, I did it, I mm-hmm. quit. So the guy named James Abernathy from a town called Brookshire Royal, he loved sports and he was a big sports guy. He came over and they called him Shaq. I saw him pull up and he came to the door. He said, hey, Mr. Dickerson, hey, how you say, is Eric here? And so I said, hey, Shaq, he said, Mr. Dickerson, you mind if I take Eric and talk to him for a minute? She said, sure, take him and talk to him. So I got in the car with him and we rode around. And I won't forget, he said, Eric, let me ask you a question. He said, I heard you quit football, man. I said, oh, yeah, I quit. I said, man, that coach is prejudiced. I said, treat us all bad. And, you know, he just listened to what I had to say. And so he said, Eric, let me ask you something else. You ride around here in Sealy. He said, what do you see? I said, man, I don't see nothing. He said, exactly, Eric, there's nothing here, son. He said, let me tell you something. He said, Eric, go back and play football. He said, hey, that may be your way out of here. He said, and it's funny how older people see things you don't see. He said, Eric, he said, you're one of the best athletes we've ever seen in these parts. I'm a sophomore. I'm like, I mean, I didn't get it. He said, I'm telling you, Eric. He said, if you don't want to play there, come play in Brookshire. We'd love to have you. And I said, okay, I'll think about it. So I went back home. My mother said, what did he say? My dad, I told him, he said, I shouldn't have quit. You know, go back and play. It could be your way out. My mother said, Eric, I don't like football, but I don't like you quit. He said, if you want to go play at Brookshire, I'll have you go. I'll drive you over there. It was only 12 miles away. I'll take you to Brookshire, you know, to school. And I decided to, you know, to stay. But Ralph Harris came to each player's house that summer. Because my best friend kind of said, man, is Ralph in your house? I'm like, no. He said, he's on his way, man. He's going to all the black players' house and come back and play football. So he came back and we all came back and we played. Now, let me say this much. It wasn't one of them feel good stories like, oh, we all, you know, everything worked out. No, I still did not like him. I mean, I had arguments. I mean, I won't forget my senior year. He told, because he wanted me to go to the University of Texas, and I didn't want to go to UT. I mean, I wasn't sure if I wanted to go or not, but he said, I'll tell the coaches, you're not interested in going to college. I said, you know what, Ralph? I said, I don't need you, man. I mean, I'm a young kid. I wouldn't talk to grownups like that. I said, I don't need you. I said, if they want me, they'll come to my house and get me. I don't need you for nothing. And so sure enough, he was telling people I didn't want to come to college, but all the coaches would come to my house. So that's how it kind of got worked out. And I went going to college.
So he wasn't really going to go to bat for you with coaches, was he?
No, not at all.
Only way at the time. It was really kind of the only way to be recruited, wasn't it?
It was through your head coach. I mean, your head coach could push you or he could sink you.
Right.
But the problem was, I guess it was good for me. And I always say, I mean, God got a plan, you can't change it. You know, the thing was, is that I was the number one recruit in the whole nation from a little town in Sealy, Texas, 2,000 people. You know, I still got the book. It was me, Elway, Marino, in that order. That's the order. And so,
that's amazing.
You know, yeah, he couldn't do anything. He couldn't do anything about it. But I'll fast forward even about him. You know, it was probably 10 years ago, but a guy called me that knows him. And he says, hey, Eric. I said, what's going on, Dan? He said, what's up? He said, what you talking? He said, man, I got somebody I want to say hi to you. I said, okay. And the guy gets on the phone. He said, hey, Eric. Soon as I heard his voice, my heart started beating fast. Oof. And I almost got pissed. I said, what's up, Ralph? He said, how's it going, Eric? I said, man, I'm good. I said, what can I do for you? He said, Eric, I just want to tell you, man, I've seen your career. He said, you had a great career. I just want to say congratulations. Congratulations on the Hall of Fame. And he said, Eric, I want to say something. He said, I was an idiot. And I want to apologize to all you guys of how I treated you guys. And I said, Ralph, thanks for saying, I really appreciate you saying that. Because it meant a lot because, I mean, you know, as a kid, you think you're wrong, but it showed that I wasn't wrong. I mean, I wasn't right at everything, but I mean, it showed. And I mean, he changed, because the guy he's playing golf was a black guy. I mean, they said they were really good friends.
Wow.
So he changed, but you know, that meant a lot for him to say that to me.
That's incredible. I mean, you know, most high schoolers, you know, would dream of having grown-ups, you know, fight each other to get them to play football, you know, whether it was cash, cars, or anything they can imagine. But what you don't think about is the empty promises, the phone calls in the middle of the night, and even threats. How much pressure weighed on your shoulders? Faced with your college decision, Eric?
There was so many. You said it was so many threats. And, man, I'm going to lose my job. I don't forget. It was a coach from A&M. He came to my house, and he came out. It was like midnight. And my mother woke me up. She said, Eric, I said, huh? I thought something happened. And she said, I said, yeah. She said, as a coach. I said, a coach? She said, he wants to talk to you. I'm like, okay, so I get up. We sit on the steps. It was stars in the sky. And he said, Eric, I'm going to lose my job if I don't get you, you know. And I'm like, and he said, what are you thinking? I say, I'm thinking about going back to sleep. That's what I'm thinking. But, you know, I talk to him. You know, and they make you feel bad because, you know, but, you know, they say that to all You know, yeah. We don't have you. You know, you the guy we need. We missing yeah. you. You know what I'm saying. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But you know, and it caused some problems in my household with my mother because my daddy passed away. But there wasn't gonna be no more major problems because I'm gonna listen to what Viola has to say. So, you know, I ain't gonna talk back. But you know, I wanted to go to OU. That's the school I wanted to go to. I wanted to go to Oklahoma. Right. But she didn't like Barry Switzer. She said that when they came in, I recommitted to him. She said, that man's a liar, Eric, and I don't trust him. She said, I don't believe him. She said, you're a Texas boy. She said, why you want to go to Oklahoma? You ain't gonna live in Oklahoma. I didn't think about that. I'm like, I didn't think about Oklahoma.
So, but that was because Josh is a couple years younger than I am, but this is around the time I've got my favorite football players, Earl Campbell, you know, sure. I'm watching football, all of that. And here's the best running back that's at SMU. And that was always kind of puzzling to me. So why was it SMU? Why did you go there?
Well, I'll tell you why I went to SMU. People think we went for the money and all that kind of stuff. No, my mother chose that school for me, really. I committed, then I said, okay, I'll go to A&M. I'll go to A&M because they wanted me to stay in Texas. So A&M was close, so I committed to A&M. I didn't really want to go to A&M. It's funny when you're a kid. I didn't like their uniform. I didn't like that Aggie, the big chin. I didn't like that. And they had no girl. They had Yale leaders. I'm like, Yale leaders? I'm like, how about some cheerleaders? I'm like, oh. I mean, that was just killing me. So I didn't want to go there for that. But I committed to them. So, dang, and I won't forget it. We had a barbecue. And my grandmother, my grandparents, cousin, they all came down. And my grandmother, my mother, put me to the side. She said, Eric, let me talk to you. She said, let me ask you a question. My mother, my real mom, my grandmother, and my mother who raised me, Viola. She said, let me ask you a question. She said, don't lie to me now. She said, are you happy with your decision? She said, don't lie. I said, no, I'm not. She said, my mother's Eric. She said, but look, I don't want you to go to Oklahoma. She said, you don't want to go. She said, because Ron Meyer had been there too, recruiting. She said,
right.
What about SMU? She said, what about there? She said, Texas, no. What about that? I said, I like SMU. I said, but man, they ain't winning. I said, but yeah, she said, I won't get serious, but you could be the first. Y'all could set something that as nobody has done. They'll be talking about it for years. I said, okay, man. I said, well, she said, I'll tell you what. She said, do you mind if this guy named Robin Buddeke from Wallace, Rosenberg, Texas, like 20 miles away. How about if I call Robin Buddeke and tell him you're interested in going to SMU? I said, okay. So sure enough, she called him. She called Robin Buddeke, and he said, Ron Meyer can be here in 3 hours. She can be here in 3 hours. But they got to go back to the beginning, how he got to this, is that he came to my house, and when Ron came there, you know, he's like any other coach, white man, you mm-hmm. go to his school. But my mother said, he said, Miss Dickinson, he said, you got anything here to eat? She said, sure. So they went in the kitchen and he put an apron on and started having my mother cook and some chicken. And I'll never forget. And I said, oh, he got me. And that's why she wanted me to go to school. She said, that's why I want you to go to school. She wanted me to go to school there. So I went down to, we left the house doing the barbecue, like about 5 o'clock. The woman, like 20 miles, rode down. Ron Meyer flew in, met with Coach Meyer. Robin Buddeke, and I committed to him, and that's how it happened. That's exactly how I got the SMU.
Well, then the Pony Express, of course, is legendary. You guys really did turn it into something. And of course, then there was a scandal. You both have, I thought it was interesting, my two idols have these famous cars from high school, college. Rex had this IROC Z.
And both of our schools went on probation.
Yeah.
But it had nothing to do with me. That's the kicker. It had nothing to do with me.
Well, he had that IROC Z, and somehow over the years, it had his initials, REC, on the door, but it became this thing that he had custom put on there, IROC Z.
That never happened.
And it's gained all this momentum through the years. People are always like, oh yeah, the IROC Z. Well, you've got a car, the gold Trans A&M, as it was once called. That forever, you know, you were just, you know, mom about, and then it's been almost about 40 years. And then in your book that we're going to get to, you actually started to talk about it and the money and what happened in the recruiting stuff. Do you want to talk about that car for a second?
Well, the car, look, the car was something that I wanted, that car, you know, and I won't forget how we go down to Houston. It was at Leo Johnigan. I used to drive by and see it off the freeway every day. See, there's a Pontiac dealership. I see the Trans Am sitting out there, and sometimes I'd pull in, and I had an old pickup truck that started with a screwdriver. So I'd go and look at it. I'm like, damn, I like this car. So I won't forget one Saturday, my real mom said, hey, we're going to go down and look at that car, Eric, in Houston. I'm like, huh? So yeah, my real mother's husband, got that car in Houston. And then Leo John said, okay, so we all rode down. My grandmother from Houston met us. My mom and my adopted mother, Viola, we all there, my grandfather. And make a long story short, sitting there, I saw these like three white men come, you know, they talking to the cell, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden they said, take it for a ride. So I took it for a drive, man. I loved it. And come back and say, okay, it's yours. I'm like, huh? I said, it's mine. I said, yeah, it's yours. And mom, I said, mama, I said, they said, don't worry about it. She said, you don't get no trouble for it. That's what she said. And sure enough, you know, I had the car. And then let me tell you, that was a Saturday. Monday morning, the NCAA was at the school, at Sealy High School, come and ask me about that car.
You know? Wow.
I'll just tell you, that car was clean, man, because they couldn't find nothing on it. My grandmother had, you know the story. Basically, I'll just tell you, A&M had, my grandmother paid for the car. Not my mother, my grandmother. People would be confused. My grandmother in Houston, they could afford the car. My grandfather, he was a crane operator. They got pretty much a new car every couple of years, a Cadillac. And so they paid for the car, and A&M gave them the money back for the car, cash. And so that was it. And voila. And I didn't find that out. I didn't find that out. So I was in the pros.
Yeah, I can imagine. I believe that.
I said, tell me how I got the car. She said, you never knew. I said, no. She said, your grandmother paid for the car, and A&M gave the money back for it. I'm like, okay. That was it. That's you never had nothing to do with the car.
Yeah, genius.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah. So I tell you, everybody was doing it. That's what's so.
Of course.
We need to get to the NIL stuff because you've been vocal about it, and you've been vocal about it for years. But I do want to know, if you didn't have to share carries in college, what would you have done?
Well, I'll say this much. I think it kept me healthy, and you know, I'm glad I did now when I look back at my career, but. I'd had 2,000 yards for sure. There's no doubt. That would have been a given. I mean, think about it. My senior year, I had my sophomore, my junior had 1,400 yards, some 14 some in time, and my senior had 16, 17, 7 yards a carry, and I had 201 carries. That's it. I averaged 7 yards a carry. I mean,
7 yards.
You know. Yeah, I would break a long run almost every game. I mean, we played A&M. I had 14 carries for 200 yards. And I always tell Herschel, I said, that's my Heisman trophy you got. You know, that's my Heisman. But, you know, they weren't going to give me the Heisman, you know.
No, they weren't.
Nah.
They weren't.
Nah, they won't give it to
me. SEC, all of that.
Nah,
hey,
yeah.
Eric, it had been like 30 years since you were at SMU before the program, you know, finally felt comfortable bringing you, Craig James, and the rest of the Pony Express back to the program. Why did it take so long, and how do you feel about it today?
Well, you know, I think it was wrong because we had nothing to do with that death penalty. I mean, the death penalty had nothing to do with us at all. I mean, I was gone. I was in the pros 5 years when they had the death penalty, and they always bring it back to me and Craig. I'm like, I wasn't there. I told them that don't recruit the guy that caused the death penalty. I told him don't recruit. I said, he's a bad guy. You know, and no one listened to me. I mean, so, you know, and then they recruited him, and he basically turned him in. Now, the big thing was is that if Ron Meyer would have stayed at SMU, or if we'd had a guy like a Ron Meyer that could have came and took that job that was really ready for it, that death penalty would have never happened. It wouldn't have. Because Ron, you know, he knew how it worked. He knew the system. I think everybody was doing it. But see, we were a smaller school. You don't beat Texas. You don't beat A&M. You don't beat Arkansas. You don't beat those big schools because they get pissed. You know, why they get all this talent? Because everybody wanted to go to SMU. You were right in Dallas, Texas. I had so many guys say, man, I just loved y'all uniforms, man. Uniform was so cool.
So
cool. With that big pony on the helmet. You know, you know, we had a big pony to cover the whole helmet. You know, and everybody wanted to go there. And you think about it, Texas wasn't having that. I mean, we beat them my sophomore year, 20-6. They were ranked number 2 in the nation. And we beat them in Austin. And that Monday morning, once again, NCAA was at the school doing an investigation. You know, that's just how that's it. You know, I just show you how one-sided it is.
Yeah.
It's so funny, too, because it's come so full circle with NIL. The football program at SMU tweeted out a graphic and said, all roads lead to Dallas, and it has a gold Trans Am on it.
Really?
Yes.
I saw it. I like it. We just did a thing for SMU, me and Craig and Lance last week. I'm excited to see it come out. It's kind of like a spoof on the gold Trans Am. But you know, I think it's great. You know, I'm glad that having the guys come back, because I lived in California, you know, and I get a lot of calls, man. They don't want us back up. And I was pissed. I'm like, man, F them. I said, we didn't do anything wrong. We're a bunch of kids. I said, they benefited from what we did. The school benefited from it, you know. And, you know, but now, you know, this time is going on. I mean, just go to show. I've always said that the kids should get something for playing college football. I'm not saying we should make NFL money, nothing like that. But you got to think, a lot of these kids, black and white kids, they didn't have any. They don't have nothing. You got to play football, go to class. That's hard. It's like a job. I mean, and you couldn't take a girl on a date. You got no money. I mean,
my mom couldn't afford to
send me no money. she was a housekeeper, you know, and that was it.
People don't understand. So, I mean, I got to college, and you know, I didn't have much. We didn't have much money, but I had teammates who, a couple of them, this was the first time they were able to eat 3 times a day.
Bam, you know, perfect. And so, that's true.
So, I mean, and if you got no money to do your laundry, to take a girl on a date, to get a burger instead of the, you know, cafeteria food, people don't understand. And yeah, you're getting your scholarship, but you're also playing your sport every day. The thing that where I've always had a problem, Eric, is, you know, basketball is one thing. Baseball's one. Football, most young men that go to college are playing 5 years of high-level football because they're redshirted. Now, most of these guys are not going on to make any money playing the game.
No.
They've got the same – it's a different physical sport. It's the same, you know, brain injuries, the same collisions for 5 straight years after 4 years of high school. And those guys don't have health insurance. They don't have any kind of, I mean, it's the same ACL that you tore that has taken 4 surgeries. They don't. How do you come down on all of that?
You know, it's amazing how people judge something they don't know anything about. Like I always tell them, I said, you know, what about the other sports? I said, that's great. Basketball. So some schools are basketball schools, like let's say Syracuse, you know, North Carolina, those are basketball schools. They run it. But I say, but let's look at it like this here. How many, let's say, I'm going to use the bit. Let's even use North Carolina. Use North Carolina. That's really a basketball school.
Or Kentucky.
You know, they're going to have at a basketball game, an arena is going to fill up how many? 12, 15,000 people? 24,000. Okay. And let's go to the football. Let's go to the football stadium where you got 60 or 70,000.
Yep.
That's the big difference. Football runs at Alabama, USC, Oklahoma. Yeah. The football run. Football pays for everything. Football pays for all of it. That's why the money comes in at. And some people don't understand that. I'm like, hey, man, when you go to a swim match, you're not going to see 100,000 people watch somebody swim on a tennis match. It don't work like that. I said, it's a football game. Tailgating, football. It's all about football. Just like the NFL. You know, it's all about, they wait for the season to show up. It's all about football, tailgating. So, I mean,
it's a hell of a business model when you don't have to pay your labor.
And so ain't it a hell of they call it slavery. That's what they call it, slavery. I mean, you ain't got to pay them nothing. All they're going to make us all this money. We're going to pay them some scholarships that the state is paying for, and we ain't got to pay them. But the NCAA is making them. Just give me the money. Can't bring, but send it over here by me. So I've always thought it was wrong.
Where do you come out on the NIL stuff that's happening right now? Yeah.
You know, I think it's good. I just think, you know, they've got to get a hold on it. You know, some of the schools can't afford, you know, to keep up with other universities. But, you know, that means, you know, the thing is that a lot of those schools, they're not going to get those athletes anyway. They're not going to get the top recruits. That's just not going to happen. So, you know, I just feel like some way you got to compensate the athletes. Now, I don't know how it's going to work. But I think the NIL thing, I think it's good for them. I really think it's good for the players. I think it's good for the schools. And my thing is, they should get rid of the NCAA. They don't need the NCAA. I think everybody should, if you want to police, you police your own conference. If you're in the ACC, you police the ACC. If you're in the SEC, you police the ACC, however you want to do it. But, you know, because you know what everybody's doing pretty much, you know, just do it.
You know what I've always struggled with is that, you know, I think back to when I was in college, the guys that I played with in college on the basketball team, but also the guys on the football team, Mark Higgs is one of my homeboys, went to from my hometown, and Mark played in the NFL for a while. But I think back most of the guys we played with were on the football team or baseball team. They didn't go on to, you know, make money playing in the pros. How great would it have been for those guys to be able to have some commercial deals locally, you know, where they could make, you know, knock out some money for 4 or 5 years in college? I mean, I don't get what's wrong with that.
I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, they almost made it like it's a crime. Like you're doing something wrong. If you get, say you get $50 for putting a tattoo on or something or whatever. I mean, they make it seem like you're doing something like it's really criminal. And these kids, these are kids that have nothing. They have nothing. I think it's fantastic. I really think it's great. And one thing I got to give SMU credit is that they're also having business people mentor these young men about the money, and about paying taxes, you know, with taxes. Yeah. Because I'm going to tell you this much, honestly. When I got to the pros and I'm going to get my check, I'm like, what is this? And why is my check only like $4,000, you know, making no money. I'm like, where's all this other money going to? And trust me, still today, young men don't understand that. If you say $1 million, they think, well, I'm getting $1 million. No, you ain't getting $1 million. You know, you might get half of that, you know. And so I think it's great what SMU is doing there. And I hope more schools do that, you know, get people to educate the young men and women, you know, of how, you know, you have to pay taxes, you know, and how the money's going to be taken out. You don't want to have to come back and you don't spend $50,000. You got a tax bill for $100,000 later.
True story. It was my rookie year, and October 15th rolled around. I hadn't gotten paid at all. I signed my contract back in the summer, but I get my first paycheck, and well, it was direct deposited. But you remember, Eric, like they leave your stub on your chair in the locker room. And I came back in after practice, my first paycheck, and I did the same thing. I looked at it and I saw it took out, you know, $10,000 for federal tax and then state tax. So, and I looked to Del Curry and Muggsy Bogues and I said, all right, so I've heard about the tax returns. When do we get this money back? And they both looked at me and said, what? And I said, yeah, when do we get this back? And they said, you can't be this dumb.
Y'all were.
Yeah, y'all, I mean, were. I had y'all no were. Idea and no y'all clue.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when I went out to Rams, to show you how it was with them, we got two different checks from two different banks. They were bouncing money. We got, let's say you got one from Wells Fargo, and you say one from Bank of America. And I'm like, okay, I thought that was normal. So when I went to the coast and I got one check, I'm like, so when we get the other check.
This podcast is brought to you by Branded Bills, the best place online for premium headwear and apparel. Brandon Mills has hundreds of designs available, including our popular state collection, where you can show your pride with hats, shirts, hoodies, and more for all 50 states. Are you a company looking to brand your business? Branded Bills also offers custom apparel options that can meet your brand standards with fast turnaround and shipping. To shop or learn more, visit brandedbills.com today.
What was it like on the field for you? I mean, you get to the Rams, 1,808 yards, a rookie record, still a rookie record your first year. Then the second year you're in the league, 2,105, still a record. You must have been thinking, this is easy.
No, it wasn't easy. It wasn't. It was not easy. And, you know, I loved it so much, though, Josh. I loved it to death. And I want to be great. That was my dad always taught me that. He said, son, all that you do, do what you might. Things done by halves and never done right. I put 100% into it. I mean, 100% in working out. You know, I had the talent. It was a God-given talent, but I worked at it. I mean, I really worked at it. My best friend, he still says today, he said, if you're going to work out with Eric Dickerson, he said, you better bring a lunch. I mean, because when I was young and I was in shape, I could work. I mean, I would push it. I'd push it to the limit. I really did. And so, you know, that first year, you know, because people had the expectation. I was tall. I was too tall to be a running back. You know, Tom Landry told John Robinson in one of the scrimmages, he said, I think he made a mistake with him. You know, I don't think he's going to last. He runs too high. And, you know, and they didn't think I was as fast because I was big and I was tall. I couldn't be running that fast. It can't be that fast. And so we scrimmaged the Cowboys, and I won't forget, boy. Man, I was so nervous, man. And I forgot the plays. And I had to go to the sideline. They had to settle me down. That's how nervous I was. And I went back in. I had a really good pride, really good game against the boys. Just a scrimmage. And he told John, he said, I think he's going to be all right. And boy, to give it to the Cowboys, to love giving it to them, man. So, I mean, that red rookie season, man, was great. I mean, it was long. I can tell you, I wasn't used to a 16-game season.
Yeah.
Around by week 12 or 13, because I was 225 pounds. By week 12, 13, I was down to 212.
Damn.
I was beat down, tired. I mean, because I hadn't carried the ball. I carried the ball 390 times, and I think I had 51 receptions. I carried about 400 times my rookie year.
Damn.
You know, as a rookie, I mean, that's I don't think you'll ever see that again as a rookie.
You're making up for all those you didn't get in college.
Yeah, that's what I told you. I'm good with that. I'm good.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah. You know, when did you have a game though, or just an experience as a rookie, whether it was in camp or in a game where, you know, you did something and you went, okay, it was against whoever or whatever, where you went, this is, it's hard, but it's easier than maybe I thought it was going to be?
Two. Geez, that's a good question, man. Nobody's asked me that. That's good, because I had one in practice where I made a cut. I won't forget, I have a picture of it in my office. I don't know how to call it. I made a quick cut and cut up field and I ran the DBs. And I'm like, man, that felt good. You know, that was a good one, that boy. That just shows how fast I was, you know, because I used to argue with my boy Leroy Irving about, you got to run. I said, Leroy, you can't run me. I said, you can't run me, Leroy. You know, I said, and we argued about it. And going back to that Jets football game, it was in the Jets. We played the Jets, the fourth game of the year. And I won't forget it. I had that 85-yard touchdown run. That was a big run. But it was late in the game. We played at Shea Stadium, and the lights came on. Like, it was getting the sun and went down, and then the lights came on top of the stadium. I'll never forget it. And we're about to break the huddle. It was a pass play. And Vince Ferragamo, he said, Eric, if I don't see anything downfield, I'm coming to you. I said, okay, I'll run a swing route. And as he dropped back, all I could see was his head going left. You could see that horn just turning this way. Then all of a sudden, I could see his arm come over the top. And as I saw his arm, all I thought, man, this is the NFL. I mean, it hit me like that. That is still my biggest moment for me.
Oh.
The catch, I picked up like 20 yards. Now I'm like, man, I'm so excited to be playing pro football.
Goosebumps.
And I just loved it.
That's so great.
Do you remember, because you were such a big back, especially then, you know, it's the The NFL's gotten so much bigger. But do you remember the hardest hit you might have put on some? And do you remember the hardest hit that you got? You, man, you were unbelievable at not allowing people to hit you square and good. And you always fell forward. It was amazing. I mean, that there's three more yards right there. You don't walk around bow-legged seemingly. I know you have pain, you have a bad back. Your mind is good for all these hits you've taken and all your body. How did you manage that? And how did you always avoid hits that way? And what was the hardest you got and the hardest you gave?
Well, I'll say as much before as my body. My body is beat up. It is. It's not what it used to be for sure. I'm in a lot better shape than most guys. You know, my memory is not what it was. As a matter of fact, me and my friend Christian Accoy was just talking about that this morning. Was hoping because, you know, what's his name? Died from the Kansas City Chiefs. Lynn Dawson, the quarterback.
Lynn Dawson.
He just passed away. And we both said, man, I hope I don't have dementia. I hope I don't go out like that. That would just be terrible. We both were talking about it. But when you talk about hits, you know, one of the big hits that I remember, I got a couple of them, two in particular. We played the San Francisco 49ers here at home. I think it was my second year in the league. And Ryan playing against Ronnie. And, you know, Ronnie Lott was known for putting you on the highlight tape, their highlight tape, and not in a good way.
Right.
So I was always, you know, kind of looking for him. And in this particular day, me and him had gotten into like a fight a couple plays before, like a fight. So later in the game, I jumped over a pile. And I still have the picture. I have a picture. It's a great picture. I'm jumping over a pile. There's all these 49ers. And I'm way up in the air. But I'm trying to get back to the ground. It looked like I'm looking at them. But I see Ronnie coming. He's coming fast, too. But I wore a flag jacket. I always wore a jacket. And he hit me in my ribs. He got me good. And he jumped. He said, I got you. I said, you didn't get me. No, you didn't. He said, yeah, I did. So I go back to the huddle. And then Ben Spiro-Gamo calls a run. But I said, no, dog. He got it. He got to throw it. So now he got me good. But in that same game, I ran over him for a third and one to get to field goal range. I ran over him. And Eric, he said, man, you said you ran flat over me. He said, my son said, yeah, I never saw you get run over before. He said, he has a big back. But that just goes to show you get each other.
It reminds me, Ronnie was I can't imagine. But I also can't imagine, you know, it's one thing being an offensive player. Can you imagine, because the rules are so different today, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's probably a good thing that they are what they are. Can you imagine being in the middle of your career as a defensive back and now all of a sudden you can't hit guys like you used to be able to hit them? What kind of or rushing the quarterback or whatever it is that you've got to dial down your timing and your speed and all of that? I can't imagine what that's like.
Well, I don't think they dial down the speed. I think they dial down how they hit you. Like they can't back in our day, they could hit you with a crown of a helmet. It didn't make a difference. They could clothesline you. They can't do all that stuff anymore. And they start teaching it from, you know, junior high to high school to college. That was back then. It was a free for all. However you got hit, you got hit. You played through concussions. I mean, I won't forget. I got hit in Chicago, and I know I had a concussion. Me and Mike Singletary hit. They played it for a long time in the NFC Championship game. And I went to the sideline, and they said, you okay? I said, yeah, I'm all right. They said, where you at? I said, I'm in Chicago. I said, who are you playing? I'm playing the Bears. What's your name? Eric Dickerson. I don't know how I remember this. They said, what's your date of birth? I said, I have no idea.
That's where I could have come in. September 2nd. He's good.
Yeah, man, but you know, they say he just got a dean. Just, you know, he's okay. You know, that shows you how. But I'm glad the way they protect the guys today. But you know, even back then, man, DBs didn't want to tackle big backs. I mean, because I can think of times where I would just, if I had to, I'd run over a defensive back, run over and run around and stiff arm him. But you know, them big guys, man, you have to deal with them guys.
Eric, the league has some great backs now. Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb, Christian McCaffrey, Jonathan Taylor. Why will none of those guys or anyone ever break your single season rushing record?
Well, I don't think they carry the ball enough. They don't carry the ball enough. That's one thing. I mean,
yeah,
you saw Derrick Henry got close. You know, he got mm-hmm. close. But you know, like I always say, you know, I got close multiple times too. I was in Indianapolis and it was on pace, even ahead of the pace at one point. It's hard to get 2,000. You know, a lot has to go into it. You got to stay healthy. You know, you can't fall behind in the game. It's just so much that goes into, you know, playing that position. And it's just really difficult. But, you know, maybe one day someone might break the record. I don't know. Maybe, you know, but I just hope I just live a long time and nobody breaks me. I'm alive and I'm dead. And I don't have to take it and have at it. You know,
maybe my son
may break. He wants to bring him back. So maybe he'll break it.
Will you sign for him to play?
You know, do I want him to play? No. But I will most definitely explain it to him. And, you know, because he plays flag football right now. Football, he runs track. He loves it. And I asked him, I said, what's your favorite? He says, you know that, track. I figured, because that's like me, I just love track. Track and then football, those two he loved the most. But I would most definitely explain it to him how, you know, rough it is. And because I tell him, I said, look, you playing flag, son. I see your dad play tackle. And, you know, it's funny, your kids don't. I said, look, then show him a video. He said, yeah. Y'all see how fast you are. I know. I'm like, okay, all right. You know, just like, okay, yeah. All right, okay. I said, okay.
Well, you had some great offensive lines. You had Jackie Slater. You had some real, but you never played with a great quarterback. What would you have done if they couldn't stack the box against you?
Whew, I say that all the time, man. God, man, do you know how frustrating it is walking to the line of scrimmage seeing 8-9 in the box? That
no,
is frustrating.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. It's so frustrating. You're walking up there and you see the safeties, like we played the Bears in the NFC Championship game. You come, the safeties right there behind the linebackers. I mean, I'm like, dang, if I get past him, I got to deal with him. You know? It'll be nice. I the first time I had a chance to play with a real quarterback, and Vince was the best quarterback I played with, Vince Ferragamo, my 1 year. But I played in the Pro Bowl with Joe Montana. And I told Roger Craig, I said, man, you look so lucky. I mean, his passes were so easy to catch. I mean, yeah, if I'd have had a quarterback, wow. Just, I always say, just a piece of quarterback.
ED, the Rams, I worked for the Cronkies in Denver for years, and the Rams put it together this past year. What's your take on the Rams, and what's your relationship with the Rams these days?
I'm really glad that we won that Super Bowl. We needed that for Los Angeles, for the city. Man, I think that Sean McVay has come in, done a great job of coaching his football team. He's done a great job of drafting. You know, I'm proud of our football team. That's all that counts. My thing, you know, my main thing is I want us to win at all costs. I
mean, yeah.
Like I said, you think I care about a Super Bowl? I want us to win. I want us to win. That's my most important thing. I want my team to win.
Before we let you go, I want to ask, what made you want to chronicle your life by writing Watch My Smoke?
I think that people, guys that knew me and knew some of my story, just a little bit of it, and every night I tell pieces, they'd ask me about certain things, and I'm like, man, Eric, really? I didn't know that, man. Man, you need to do a book, man. You need to do a book. It'll be great. I mean, and it just came to a point where I think mostly for my kids one day, they'll look back and they could have to look at, you know, my kids, my grandkids, their kids. You know, that was my great-great-grandfather. That was my grandfather. You know, that was my dad. You know, they can look back and they can read some of the stuff that I didn't get a chance to tell them. And some of the things, honestly, Rex, I'm sure as time goes on, I'll forget. You know, I'll forget a lot of it. You know, and that's just life. You know, and
have you found it therapeutic writing it?
Yes, I'm telling you, because it wasn't some of that stuff. I got really emotional. I broke down and started crying. And some of it, talking about my father, my relationship with my father. I miss my mom and stuff. And you know, even talking about my college head coach. I mean my high school head coach. I mean, how, you know, I was angry at him, man. I was just really angry because I saw how he did not just me, other players too. And you know, when you leave that, you leave behind. I can't help these other guys.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, what did he do when we left? You know. So most definitely, it helped me a lot to let stuff go. And, you know, people, I tell people, you know, that read the book, I'm not angry at all. I mean, this is what happened. Because I think what happened is some guy wrote a letter, my wife got it, he said that you sounded angry. I said, well, you know, it's funny how anytime a black man starts telling the truth, we sound angry. You know, I said, but white guy says he don't sound angry. But a Latino guy says he don't sound angry. Asian, but when we talk about it, I would just tell you, I'm pissed off. I was just saying like that. I'm pissed, but I'm not angry. I'm just telling a story. And my story is my story is in that book, and it is all true.
I mean, I just got to say to both of you, this is a crazy day for me. 14-year-old me would explode. Literally, like, there'd be chunks of me everywhere. But so I'm just soaking this in, enjoying it. I know it's coming to an end. Who was your Eric Dickerson? You're my idol. Who was your Eric Dickerson?
That's easy. OJ. OJ Simpson. He was
We were guessing before the show started, and he was one of two or three. Yeah.
That's the only reason I played running back, because he played it. Yep. I wanted to play running. He was 6'3". He was fast, you know, and that's why I played the position of running back.
Where were you like when Gale Sayers was coming up?
I was born in 1960, and he was playing. Right. I was a little kid, you know, I was real small. I never saw a little bit of Gale's, a little bit, but I didn't see any of Jim Brown. All I saw was OJ. OJ was my guy.
You crossed over with.
Is there anybody today that you would pay to watch a running back?
Yeah. I mean, I like to watch Zeke play. I like Derrick Henry. I like him a lot. I like him. He's a big guy. Defensive backs are afraid of him. You can tell. They're like, hey, I got to make a business decision.
Yeah, I got out at LAX one day, and he got out of like the Uber next to me, and he had just won the Heisman, and I was just
he's
like,
big. Isn't he big?
He's big.
Oh, I'm 6'3", yeah. And I was like, he's not a defensive end, or I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, he's a big guy, man. He's a really big guy, you know. Matter of fact, when I met him, I stood there and I'm like, man, I said, I think you're taller than me. You know? He's wider than me. He's wider than me for sure. Yeah, yeah. He's a big guy, yeah.
Eric, what's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie? God, that's a tough one. I have so many. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, I like Shane.
Okay.
I like Shane. Shane is my weapon.
Great move.
I think it's Face Off. No, Face Off with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, yeah. Nick Cage and John Travolta.
Yeah. John Travolta, yeah. I like that too. I like that movie too. Matter of fact, I got the money clip that he had he had 2 45s and he had a money clip in there. Money. I had that money clip made. I still have it. I've had that money clip for like 25 years. So that's how much I like that movie.
Oh, that's great.
What about sitting front row center for any performer or speaker, dead or alive?
Jesus Christ. If I could sit in front of us, right front center, Jesus Christ, for sure. You say dead or alive. I would love to most of these. Hear what he'd have to say. And if you never had to go back even just a little bit, Julius Caesar. Because I just went to Rome in the last couple months. And we had a tour guide that was so knowledgeable about, you know, I like the Roman Empire and Egypt. And she was giving me all this knowledge about Julius Caesar, how he was loved by the people, how they loved him and why they killed him because he became too powerful and how he came back with an army, you know, and let's say he conquered parts of Southern California. Well, he'd give that to some of his army and say, you take this, you till it, work it, and pay taxes to the Roman Empire. And that's why the soldiers loved him so much. So I would love to hear Julius Caesar speak.
Yeah, that's great.
Eric, thanks, man. You got to come back and do it again. Can't thank you enough for doing this.
No problem. Hey, Josh, man, I got to say, man, thanks for being a fan. I pretty like that. I didn't know, but man, I really, really thank you for being a fan. I hope I lived up to your expectations.
Well, know this is his end game. You'll be doing a pod with him soon.
Yeah. I mean, now at least I won't just walk by and go, Eric Dimitri, take an Aunt Healy. See that kid.
I see that kid right there.
All right, Eric. Thanks, bro.
All right, thank you. All right, bye, bye.
Josh, Eric Dickerson.
I mean,
how do you feel?
I gotta take
a cigarette.
Some time. Yeah, I need a cigarette. I mean, you and he, like, people that went to junior high with me and then high school they know what this means to me. They're freaking out. I can't believe, you know, it was so funny that we had to cancel and all I had then was this shirt to wear, but then I had to come home and deal with some family stuff. And then this week I found all those posters.
That's insane. That your mom kept them.
Yeah. They were in this corner. I don't think she would have where they were, you know, it was like, and I just, what a day for me. Pinnacle.
It made his day, made my day. We're so fortunate. Anyway, that was Eric Dimitri Dickerson. And that was episode 53. Let's do this again next week, Josh. Want to?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Ep 54. Back again next time, the Rex Chapman Show with super cool Josh Hopkins, powered by basketballnews.com.